Guys, welcome back. It's Danielle Victoria. We're on the Hashtag Goals podcast, and I have a very, 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 very special guest, my future father-in-law, Lau Lu Latitude.
I only get better, I only make moves, and I'm a dipped owl, but I never quite lose. If we head south, never down with the blues, I'm too bright for that
hue. Hashtag Goals.
What's up? This is Hashtag Goals, the Millennials Podcast.
Yes, we're giving you the guide to life. All the mistakes we made, we're helping you to not make those.
Yay! AKA Pastor Lopez. So we're going to get to, like, talk to him, and you get to see, like what his life has been like, and you know, his purpose and what God's put on his heart. And I'm very excited for this because I feel like it's so important for us to talk to our elders about, like, how you grew up. Because, like, sometimes we don't ask those questions. So I'm here, Danielle Victoria. Kenyo's here.
What's up, guys?
Kenyo's here. And we have Lalu here. Pastor Lopez here. So, Pastor Lopez, how do you feel about being on our podcast?
No idea. I don't have an opinion yet.
Not Did you tell them that it was my
not until I know what it's about or what
the
questions are going to be. But yeah, it's nice.
I think that we'll
I don't
ask
think
him.
We told them that he was my dad.
Oh, this is Kenyo's
kind of
father.
Ah.
I don't think they knew that. This is Kenyo's father, my future father-in-law. And
she did say my future father.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did say that in the beginning.
So that
they don't really know on the podcast that we're together.
Yeah, they don't know.
We're keeping it like a secret for the podcast. But
yeah, but the secret's
now
out.
Now you know,
this is my father, basically my father-in-law. So it's really funny. I'm excited to do this podcast because I feel like me and him are so much alike.
That's amazing. That's why she gives me so much trouble.
he's like my spirit animal. I love hanging out with him. He's like, you know, if I lived in Crystal City, I would just follow him around and feed chickens and go fish all day. But he's an amazing person. So today we're gonna get to know a little bit more about him and how he was raised. So, Pastor Lopez, how are you feeling today?
Splendid. Praise be to the Almighty God.
Yes.
I don't want it to seem confusing, though. His name is not Pastor Lopez. It is Pastor Latitude.
Okay, yeah.
Well,
it's Pastor Latitude. And Crystal City is
Lopez.
In
the woods, they call me Lopez. Because no one can pronounce Latitude in this area.
Latitude. I've been working my ear, but so I'm doing Baba Ni to all my friends. So we're working on it. But Pastor Latitude is here with us. So let's start out. How were you raised? How was it when you were growing up?
Well, I had an interesting upbringing because my dad worked with Nigerian Railways.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to live in different areas of the country. So by the time I got to high school, I could speak all the three major Nigerian languages.
Mm-hmm.
So that
what three are those?
Yoruba, Igbo, and Hausa.
Okay.
Because I was born in the north. See, we are from the west, but I was born in the north.
So you're not from Lagos, are you?
No, Abeokuta. Abeokuta is like
okay.
1 hour from Lagos.
Okay.
So I was born in the north, which is the Hausa area,
mm-hmm.
and went to elementary school in the north and in the east,
mm-hmm.
which is the Igbo area.
Yeah.
So by the time I got to the west, I didn't even get to the west until I was ready to go to high school.
Yeah.
Even though we spoke Yoruba at home, so that was no problem. But it was when I got to high school, I could interact with almost everyone
anybody
from
right
the nation, because I spoke everybody's
oh yeah
language. So
that was cool.
Yeah.
It was cool. So
and then I learned French when I was in high school.
So oh really?
We
oui. I tr oh
let me
see.
No.
I'm not even going to try anymore. I was thinking about something. It's so crazy because in college, I was an advanced French, and now I can't even recall it.
Well, the thing with language is when you don't speak it.
You have to, that's what I was telling mommy, is that I have to, like, what you're about, I have to speak it to people, you know, like, speak it to Kenyo to, like, retain it. So how was your bringing up? How was it in your household with your mother and your father?
My dad was a disciplinarian. Mm-hmm. My mom was a nurturer, naturally. Yeah. So I think I had a good upbringing. Mm-hmm. But by the time I got into high school, mm-hmm. I was in the boarding house for some time, you know, which is, what do they call it in America? When you go to
like boarding school? Like when you go away?
Dormitory, yeah, where you live on campus.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so for about 2 years. Yeah. Or so. The rest of the time I was in Abeokuta, mm-hmm. at our house in Abeokuta. Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
So were you closer to your mother or your father, or how was it?
My dad died relatively...
young?
Yeah, I was... like what we would call the 12th grade equivalent.
So like you're graduating high school.
Yeah. So
he passed away.
It was just at the time when we were kind of beginning to bond, to gel, you know.
Yeah.
Because I was coming to myself being an adult, and now I could relate to him. It was just about that time when he died.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say that I really got to know him that much, because being working with the railways, he's traveling a lot.
Yeah.
So so by the time he retired and we're just about to start getting to know each other,
away.
That's when he passed.
Okay. What characteristics do you think that you got from your dad? Do you think that you...
Honesty.
Huh? Honesty?
Honesty. If you don't want anybody to know about something, don't tell my dad. He didn't keep secrets.
He doesn't keep secrets.
You told me.
Yeah. I'm the same way.
Wow. I was telling you. I was just giving you an appointment. I was just telling what you do.
Okay. So were you? So did that make you closer to your mother?
I think I was closer to my mother.
Is she still alive?
No.
She passed away?
She passed away. So I'm an orphan.
But you have us.
You have us. You can't be a 70-year-old orphan. That's called being 70 years old.
I'm not 70, I'm 69.
Exactly. Don't come for him. He's 69, not 70. Okay, so, all right.
I was going to say I'm hearing a lot of these stories for the first time, but not really. I've heard most of them.
I feel like Kenyo doesn't ask a lot of questions that he should ask.
I don't really. But I've learned. Anyway, I'll let you guys continue.
So how was it transitioning? So I know, like, you were there, and then you eventually wanted to come to America.
No.
You didn't want to come? How was it?
Not until I finished college.
Yeah.
I just started thinking of going to graduate school.
Yeah.
I had scholarships to colleges, graduate schools in Nigeria, in London, in England. And the United States. The reason I took the United States was because not only did I have a scholarship, I had a graduate assistantship job. Essentially, I had a job.
Yeah.
So I was on scholarship and I was making money.
So you had a job. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
So it was easier.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me about how you met your wife. So, Miss Yemisi, my future mother-in-law.
Sorry, now you learn. From the mess. <You see? laughs> For those of you young bachelors out there, you see, you got to pick up a few pointers on how to work your way.
I cannot. I can't with your dad.
Was hot. You see, her brother was my classmate, actually my best friend when I was in high school.
Are y'all still friends?
Yeah, we're still friends. Mm-hmm. And we spent a lot of time together. I did not know he had a sister. You see, you know how these guys keep their sisters away from guys.
He's trying to protect her. He's like, so, if Lau Lu sees who sees her, he's gonna try to get her.
But and I went to their house regularly.
Yeah.
But the Nigerian household is such that their mother lived in one house and he kind of lived like with his uncle. So yeah. I was in the uncle's place most of the time. So
but was she with the mother?
Yes, she was.
Oh, okay. So you didn't see her. Yeah.
And then there was a period of time when she was in the dormitory too. So, but the first time I met her, she just came to see him, and I said, "Ooh la la."
She's a beauty. Miss Yemisi is a beauty. If you ever see Kenya's mom, she's a beauty. She's a very beautiful lady.
And I was there. So we've been going around chasing these girls, and you have a beautiful sister. I said, that's okay. I know what to do. You know what I did?
What did you do?
I started going to the house more frequently. But this time when I would go, I wouldn't go to the uncle's place.
You go to the mom's house? He's like, yeah, I'm here at the main house.
So I made sure that she got to know me and she seen me, and when I get there, of course, I put on.
Was it like love at first sight, or how was it?
Well, for me, yeah, I became impressed. I didn't know about she. I don't know about her. I mean, she didn't give me any signals or anything, but I knew what I was doing. That's why I was kind of
working. You're a smooth operator.
Operator, that's it. You got it.
Smooth operator. Yeah.
So we were, but you know, as the Lord would have it, mm-hmm. she represented her school mm-hmm. in what we call science competition. The schools will have science competition, mm-hmm. and I represented my school.
Yeah.
So we will meet at these competitions.
Oh, you're competing.
That's where we do. We had things in common, and we began to interact.
Yeah, we're both smart. If we don't know, Kenya's mom is a dentist. His father is a pastor and a professor. So they're both extremely smart. Intelligent and good-looking individuals.
So let me tell you, I haven't heard the whole story yet. So what happened was, we would have parties at the end of the year. Not at the end, maybe 2-3 times a year, mm-hmm. like Christmas, Easter.
The schools?
No. We boys.
Oh, okay.
We were friends.
Okay.
So we were like maybe 6 of us. Mm-hmm. I said, well, we kind of invite some new girls to our parties. You know? Why don't you invite your sister and her friends?
You're trying to be sneaky. Yeah. Why don't you invite your sister?
So that's how we began to meet at parties.
You say, no. hey, invite your sister over here.
So by the time they knew what was going on, we were already hooked up. We were boyfriend, girlfriend. Mm-hmm. So.
And how long have y'all been married?
Well, we got married in 1980.
Oh, wow.
So that's what?
Before I was born.
39, 49.
40 years.
Yeah, 40 years.
Yeah.
40 years next year.
What do you think the secret to a good marriage is?
The Lord.
The Lord. Jesus Christ.
I don't know what other people depend upon, but if you fear God, mm-hmm. you will respect your spouse, because you know that whatever you do to her, mm-hmm. God's going to ask you. That's number one. Then, but most importantly, it's just someone you like, that's it.
Yeah,
you gotta like somebody. So you know, if you they talk about love, but I don't think people understand love. And the problem with love in English language is that it really doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah.
See, in the Greek language,
yeah,
there are like at least 7 different words that define love. Depending on what your object of love, affection is.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So when you talk about love, okay, let's say even the love that a man has for a woman.
Yeah.
What kind is it?
Yeah.
Because it even varies. In Greek, there is what they call
there's agape charisma. Love. There's a bunch of different types of love. And there's even books on that. I actually read a book recently, not recently, but like about a year or two ago, about like romantic love not being real. That it's just like there's a bunch of different types of way you can love somebody and you can connect with that person, right?
Yeah.
So I do understand that it's not always like love is just not a definitive type of word to express how you feel for somebody.
Because if you come to understand, if you studied Greek, and you understand the different definitions of love, you will see that there is a kind of love, apart from the agape love, which is God's love.
Yeah.
That is, I think it's the, I've forgotten that, I think it's the charisma one, where you just like being around someone.
Mm-hmm.
You enjoy someone's company.
Yeah.
You have an affinity for them.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with eroticism. Or sex or anything like that. So if you have that kind of relationship in your marriage, you find out that you can even fight. You can fight.
Yeah.
In the morning and in the afternoon, you've forgotten about it. You just come back and say, oh, do you know what happened when I get wet at this time? And I say, yeah, you mean it?
Yeah.
And you've forgotten about the fact that you had a fight in the afternoon. It's because
Did you have to grow into that, or was that something that was instilled into you as a person?
You know what's interesting about our relationship? Do you know that we courted for 10 years
before
we
really? Got
married? Yeah.
Oh.
Because from high school, we didn't get married until I was in graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
We were until we finished college.
Yeah.
So we knew each other for 10 years. So we knew each other.
So you were friends.
Yes. I think that's the word. Because we were friends. You got to marry somebody you are friendly with.
Are we friendly? No, <I'm sorry. laughs> Are you friendly, Kenya? Just play with you. We're super friendly. But that's super interesting. Okay, so tell me about the transition from leaving Nigeria to coming to the U.S. and, you know, like how it was and having kids and, like, you know, coming into America. Like, how was it different for you and, like, how was your experience?
Well, it's a potpourri of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much as, how would I put it, the cultural differences and such.
Did you feel, like, when you came, did you feel like you were like an immigrant? Like, no. How'd you feel? You felt like you were just like transitioning over?
Yeah, I was comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm always comfortable around people.
Yeah.
And being with different kinds of people was not my first experience. Before I came to the United States, I lived in Australia for 6 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
Industrial training.
Oh.
My third year of college, every engineering student has to go for what they call industrial training.
Yeah.
Where they send you out to a factory to work and get some practical experience.
Mm-hmm.
Mine happened to be in Australia.
How was the race relations there? Because I hear that Australia, and I know I don't want to be like inflammatory, but I feel like people say that Australians are a bit racist, like, because you don't see a lot of black people in Australia. Yeah. How was your experience there? How were you treated?
They were very careful with me.
Careful?
Because they knew this guy was educated.
Well, yeah, they know you're smart. Yeah, and
they knew I wasn't coming to stay, so yeah. I was no threat to anyone.
Yeah.
So they knew I was gonna go home anyway. So they were careful with me, and I really didn't get into the society. But certain things began to play themselves out.
Yeah.
In the 6 months I was in Australia, I never met a sober aborigine.
What do you mean by that?
Met an aborigine. An aborigine, a native Australian, the black people of Australia.
Oh, okay.
I never met a sober one.
Yeah.
Because they had put them in reservations.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much how the United States treated the Native Americans, but worse in Australia.
Oh, really?
Because they put them in this reservation, you don't get to see them. So occasionally when they wander to town, they drunk. See, what happened was that when I began to research it, I found out that they have very little tolerance to alcohol.
Really?
Yeah.
And also?
The Native Americans, because alcohol was strange. It was strange to the culture.
Yeah.
So when the Westerners came to Australia and they introduced alcohol,
mm-hmm.
the Native Americans became alcoholics easily.
Yeah.
Because of their lack of tolerance. So, and in the reservation, so what they do is that they give them this monthly, like, welfare.
Like allowance.
So, this allowance
for
them to live on. So these people are just pretty much drinking themselves into extinction.
Oh, no. That's crazy. No, but I hear that about Australia, and I always wondered about that, because, like, I'm like, you know, I've been a flight attendant, and, like, Australia, I never seen any really black people there at all. You don't see black people there.
Yeah. What was the name of? You have some really famous black Australian athletes, like Eva Goolagong. Eva, what was her maiden name? So you won't know. The 400 miler, the 400 distance runner.
There's a couple of them that are.
But
that
you will notice something. Yeah. They are not pure aborigines.
Yeah.
They're mixed.
Yeah.
Even though they look black, they're mixed.
Yeah.
So the ones, so those of them who have mixed with Westerners, with white people, they've had some offsprings that are doing well. But the pure native aborigines are going into extinction. I predict the time is coming when you won't even see a single aborigine. And it's a systematic eradication of these people.
And you know what?
It's a form of genocide that is being practiced elsewhere, and they're hiding it.
It's like that with a lot of cultures, and I've had a conversation about, you know, me being Creole. Our language is pretty much becoming extinct. Like, there's not.
You have some French.
We're French. Connection. I'm French Creole. I'm not Haitian Creole. I'm French Creole. There's not a lot of people who speak my language. And before my grandmother passed away, she tried to instill in me, like, the language.
Yeah.
But, like, people don't speak it. So it's, like, becoming extinct.
Yeah.
And then people think that we're Cajun and Creole. I'm like, oh, it's two different things. Like, you know, I'm not Haitian. I'm not this. I'm that. So I understand, like, how some stuff gets phased out, and it's, like, unfortunate because, like, you know, you want your kids to uphold that legacy of, you know, that language or that, but it is doesn't always work out like that. And I experience that right now being a Creole woman is, like, I barely meet Creole people.
Yeah.
I barely meet them.
You see, but what's happening to you or to other Creole people? It's not a systematic eradication of the Creole language. It's a domination that comes around as a result of people migrating and people. Other people coming in and
And Creole's like a slang of French.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's just like it's not like we're not totally eradicated. It's just that like our the way we speak is a little bit different. Because I mean I can speak French to a Creole person, they would understand it.
Yeah.
But it's certain words that we use that are not the same that you would use like in proper French language. Yeah. But I understand that, but let's turn over to, so you come to America, you're in Australia,
yeah.
You come to America, you're with Mama Yemisi, so how was it?
We made her here, we got married in Nigeria.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Oh, so y'all were already together before y'all came. So
well, I came first.
Oh, you came first?
She was still in dental school when I came.
Mm.
So she came to join me later.
Oh, okay.
You can imagine a year later or so.
So how was it? So I know you have Kenyo, Buki, Bumi, B. So was it planned or how did that work out for you?
Well, I always wanted a large family.
You did?
Yeah, because I grew up in an extended family's system.
Mm-hmm.
We had two uncles, several aunts, everybody's brother and sister to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, I mean, we don't call them uncles or aunts.
Yeah, we're the same way.
So that was like, I enjoy that tremendously.
Yeah.
I interacted very well with my nephews and cousins.
Mm-hmm.
Every Christmas,
yeah,
we would go to one of the uncle's house to celebrate Christmas, and all the kids would be there.
Yeah.
So imagine a house with about 12 to 15 kids.
Oh, yeah. Fun. That's fun.
We had a lot of fun. By the time we woke up in the morning, we ate, we played, we go out and play soccer.
Yeah.
So we always look forward to the holidays.
Yeah.
So that in my mind said, well, it's always like to have a large family, but because I didn't make the distinction between the nuclear family and extended family.
Mm-hmm.
So, but my wife, on the other hand, she didn't want a lot of kids. So,
really?
Yeah, she would have been satisfied with just one or two.
This one barely made it. That's why his name is Olobo Solo.
After him, she had tubal ligation to make sure that there were not going to be any more accidents. Or anything,
yeah, no. Yeah, yeah.
Left to me. Mm-hmm. Would have had 20 children.
Because you don't have to have the children. You just gotta put the bun in the oven. You don't have to do that. So you have these kids. It's very interesting because you're such a charismatic character and such a intellectual. Who do you think you gravitate more towards? I mean, because there's a good amount of kids. Like, who do you think you gravitate more towards? Like, if you want to call somebody, like, what kid do you gravitate more towards?
Out of my four kids?
Huh?
Out of my kids?
Yeah, like, who would you call, like, yeah, like, for, like, creative type of stuff? Like, who do you gravitate more towards?
I don't know if I gravitate towards my kids in such a way.
Yeah, like not like your favorite kid, but like, you know, if you have like a question about something or you want to talk about something, who would you call? You call B? You call Kenya? Or you call Buki? Who do you call?
I would say.
Are you just call Yemisi?
Yemisi, that's right.
You call your wife. But like, I'm not calling my kids.
Let me see. In our culture, parents don't call kids for discussions or opinion or like that. Mm. The kids call the parents.
Yeah.
The other way around.
Yeah.
You know. But if you are asking me, who do I think takes after me the most?
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's Busola. Because he,
because he's here.
I'm very adventurous. Yeah, the things that I do, and he likes that. So sometimes it can be a defect.
you are both charismatic, and you are both adventurous, and I think that's why people gravitate towards you. And the thing I was going to talk about you being a pastor, which a lot of people, which you'll understand, Papa Lyington is a pastor, is me and Kenyo have spoken about it several times, is that I feel like you're a pastor that relates to every type of age group, you know? Like, you're very patient with, you know, all types of age groups. And I think that, like, a lot of the pastors, sometimes they just, like, you know, they're talking to the older people. But, like, I feel like when I hear your messages, it could be to anybody. And you're so patient with the people that are at the church that it's to the fact that it's just like, you know what? I mean, like, it's almost like a youth pastor to a certain extent, because I think that it's so important for us to have our youth, you know, knowing about Jesus and doing this stuff. And I think that the way that you talk to people, it's not condemning them. It's just like having a conversation. I think that comes from you being a professor and an intellectual. And I think that it comes across like in a very charismatic way that I feel like people can come to you. That's why people here in Crystal City, they come to you and they want to be your friend and hang out with you.
Well, I thank God for that, if you've noticed that. But I've not always been like that.
Really?
In my younger days, I was very impatient.
Really?
I had very little tolerance for mediocrity.
Yeah.
So if I saw someone, there was a time when I see a homeless person, especially a black homeless person.
Yeah.
So not necessarily homeless.
Panhandling.
Panhandler.
Yeah.
I would get really angry. So what's the matter with you? You got two hands and two legs and you have...
You can go work, yeah.
You go get a job.
Yeah.
God had to teach me in a hard way that I got no business being like that.
Yeah.
You see?
It's judgmental.
It's judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So I have not always been like that. I mean,
When do you think the turning point was when you... Your heart started, the empathy started to come, where you were just, because like when I see you talk to people, it's like you're very patient. I mean, I know it comes with age, of course. Like, you're just like, I've been through it, seen this, done that. But I think that you're one of my favorite pastors. I mean, like, I like T.D. Jakes, I like a lot of the, but you're one of my favorite pastors. So I'm like, when did that change and the empathy started to be like, okay, hey, like...
I think when I went to the seminary, that played a big role in molding me. Because I went there with a lot of hang-ups. I had to deal with a lot of things.
What made you go to seminary? Like, what was the
turning? I have to.
You had to?
Yeah. See, when... I was saved in 1974. I became born again in 1974.
Yeah.
In that year, I knew the Lord was calling me to the ministry. But I wanted...
It was just heavy on your heart?
Oh, yeah. But yeah. I wanted no part of it.
Yeah.
God, I met a lot of pastors. They just were not just how much do they pay pastors? And I had visions of being an industrialist. Doing all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
But not until 1994, 20 years later, when the Lord challenged, and if I was the one who was challenging the Lord, I said, look at the state of the church. Mm-hmm. Look at what people are doing there, and you are not doing anything about it. Yeah. You are even giving them powers. You are talking to them. You say, who are you to talk?
Yeah.
20 years I've been calling you. You didn't answer me. Mm-hmm. Now you want to complain about the church? So I said, okay, Lord.
Did you have any like spiritual like mentors when you were in seminary or like before?
Several. Several. Some of those guys are just outstanding.
Outstanding people.
Like Dr. Thompson, Dr. Ganey, just outstanding men of God.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's awesome. So God had to kind of work on your heart to get the empathy there, because he had been calling you ministry for a long time, and you were kind of just like not wanting to.
Yeah, see, so when I told you, I said, okay, all right, I'm ready now. I'll do whatever you say. So should I just go and start a church? He said, no, you are not ready.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not ready? Mm. I've been a Christian for 20 years. I know the Bible in and out. He said, no, you got to go to the seminary.
Yeah.
And he closed every door except that of the seminary. I could not go anywhere.
How was it being in seminary? And you were married at this time.
Yes.
How was that?
My wife was at that time planning to go to dental school. Mm-hmm. In fact, she had just gotten an admission because she couldn't practice in America. With a Nigerian
dentist. So she got her dental license in Nigeria.
She had to go to dental school and get a license here. So, my wife was in school. Mm-hmm. I have 4 little children. Mm-hmm. I had no job. Mm-hmm. But we never went hungry one day. In all the 6 years we were at the seminary, the Lord provided for all our needs.
Yeah, it's just basically like you went on faith because you knew that God was calling you to do that.
I had no choice, not even going on faith.
Yeah.
I had no choice but to go there. I had nowhere else. He made me go make sure I went to the seminary.
That's amazing. Okay. So, all right. So, you've come from Nigeria, right?
Yeah.
And we see what's going on in the current state of America and our politics with immigration. How do you feel about, you know, people being detained in these detention camps and doing all this stuff? Like, how do you, like, process that? Like, how do you feel about it?
You see, every country has a right to protect its borders.
Yeah.
So
do you think Trump is right?
Not that he is right.
Yeah.
He's right. The way he's going about it
is the wrong
way. What's wrong.
Yeah.
You see, you can still protect American borders by doing it compassionately. Say, listen, you guys want to come here, you got to come in the right way.
Yeah.
So go through the process. We will process your application if we find you to be an acceptable candidate. But this guy, what's wrong with Trump is, I tell you the truth, but for the fact that I believe that God has a purpose for letting him be president, it's very difficult. It's very
get into that, though. Get into that, because, you know, the thing is, like, everything happens for a reason, right?
Yes.
And as a pastor and as a guy, as a person, we all have our own relationship with God, right?
Yes.
But pastors are held to a high regard.
Yes.
So what do you think that Trump's purpose is in office, and
I've seen one of two, actually.
Mm-hmm.
His relationship with Israel is solid.
Mm-hmm.
God still has a soft heart for Israel.
Yeah.
But let's not forget that this is God's chosen people initially.
Yeah.
That's where his son came through.
Yeah.
You know. So, and even the Bible says it, whoever blesses Israel is blessed. Whoever curses Israel will be cursed.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that connection is there.
Mm-hmm.
Only Trump could have moved American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
All the other presidents are kind of playing footsie with the Arabs, and they didn't want to offend anybody else. As much as I love Hillary Clinton,
mm-hmm.
And we, when Trump won, I went into deep depression.
I did too.
I couldn't watch the inauguration. Up to today, I haven't watched it.
No, like, this will happen. Let me tell you. I was waiting for the results to come in. I fell asleep. I woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I saw him, his son, Melania on TV, and I was like, a joke. I was late to work the next day, and I was just like, y'all should excuse me because this fool is president. Yeah, I was just like, y'all should excuse me. Y'all see what happened? But I mean, like I said, everything happens for a reason. I think that people need to take more of a a stance in politics, right?
Yeah.
You know, so if you're upset about something, do something about it. Learn more about that thing. So to wrap it up, let's say, what advice would you give to the younger generation? You're this established pastor. What would you give advice?
Where do I start from?
What do you see, and what advice would you give to our type of listeners, our age?
Give one piece of advice.
Yeah, one piece of advice. What would you give to them?
Plan. Yeah.
We don't do
enough planning at all.
Yeah.
If we do any planning, if I have to do things all over again, I would do a lot of planning.
Yeah.
I would have a daily plan, weekly plan, monthly plan, yearly.
He's like that though.
Yeah. You can't.
Kenya's very much
plan,
like that.
10-year plan.
Yeah.
Plan.
Yeah.
And then work the plan. Dennis Wheatley, put it this way, he said, winners in life make it happen.
Yeah.
Losers let it happen. Don't flounder in anything.
Yeah.
And you see, also, you could make sure that you are productive.
Productive, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because you could be busy and not be doing anything.
You're just busy doing stuff, but not doing.
Minor.
Yeah. All right. And then, what would you say about people who are trying to get a closer relationship with God? How do they go about doing that?
In the first instance, you gotta be born again.
Yeah.
You gotta give your life to Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, totally and completely. Can't hold
you have to surrender.
You can't hold any part of your life back. See, the most difficult things that I have gone through in life is because there are some things I held on to for too long.
Just like issues? Just
yes,
like
that I don't want to let go of this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I paid dearly for them because eventually God will take them away.
Mm-hmm.
You know how Corrie ten Boom put it? She said she had learned to hold everything loosely because when God wants to take it away, if you hold on to that, he will pry your hands open
and take it.
And that hurts.
Yeah.
And that hurts. You know. So you gotta
surrender yourself.
Surrender yourself. When you do, it's a tremendous adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so much fun to sit back and see what God will do. Because He's always true and faithful to His word. You can't deceive Him.
Yeah.
You can't mess around with Him.
Yeah.
You know how the Bible puts it? It says, be not deceived.
Mm-hmm.
God is not mocked.
Yeah.
For whatsoever a man soweth, that also shall he reap.
Mm-hmm.
You see. So it's a tremendous adventure.
Yeah.
Just walk with God.
You really gotta surrender yourself. And so at this point in your life, we just celebrated your birthday. I brought you some cheesecake.
Yes. And some people ate all of my cheesecake before they left.
I think think you're referring to yourself. I had one slice.
One slice. Somebody else had another slice. Somebody else
had Mama, you miss he had a slice too. You know I didn't eat that. But at this point in your life, what's most important to you? Like what do you want your legacy to be as we end this interview with you? What do you want your legacy to be?
You know what's interesting? I don't feel fulfilled yet.
You don't?
I know what would make me fulfilled is if by some magic way I can destroy denominationalism in Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I can get all Christians to come together.
Yeah.
I can get everybody to be on fire in spreading the gospel.
I think you'll be fulfilled as soon as the wedding is done. You'll be fulfilled because really? Then I'll officially be your daughter.
I agree with you.
Then I'll be talking to my dad.
Yeah, that would be great, you know. But it is true. Every day I wake up with this sense of, man, what is it that we can do?
Yeah.
To get the gospel out to people.
Yeah, and it's hard because I think that people give Christians a bad rap because they think that we're hypocrites, you know? And it's just like, all of us are not like that, and we don't think that way, you know? Like, I think that our job as Christians is to, like, you know, go out and spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. Yes. But everybody is not like that, and they're not. That's why I think that I respect you so much as a pastor, because I feel like when Jesus came down, he wasn't just hanging out with just like the good people. He's hanging out with the people that people discounted or thought that were bad people, you know? Yeah. But that's what you're supposed to do. Yeah, that's exactly. And that's like what we our reflection of us is. We need to go out there and like not try to be in our little circles or cliques. We need to go out there and like the people that people don't want to talk to, we need to talk to them. And I think that you as a pastor do that. I think that's why I have so much respect for you and your ministry.
Well, let me thank you for that, but let me tell you a secret to my ministry. If you've been wondering. Raising all this God kind of ministry.
Mm.
When I was in seminary,
mm-hmm.
when I was about to graduate, we were in the chapel praying that day.
Mm-hmm.
We had a guest preaching.
Yeah.
And I was leaning there and I was praying. The Lord began to speak to me and said, what kind of ministry do you want?
Let me tell you, was it like a, you know, people always like, oh, God talked to you. Was it like a soft, how does God speak to you? Is it?
You know, God speaks to me in several ways.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that I if I have to describe it, you know what telepathy is?
Yeah.
When you just know, when you're communicating with someone, you know what they are saying.
Telepathy, yeah.
And you are responding to it. That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
It's not as if you're going to be hearing a voice.
Yeah, it's like a small, soft voice, but like it's like you hearing, know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he said, what kind of ministry do you want?
Mm-hmm.
I said, Lord, the kind of ministry that is near and dear to your heart.
Yeah.
Do you know that since that day, I have not had an easy ministry? The Lord has always taken me to problem areas where I have to try and change them.
But you're a problem solver, and I think that's why God puts you in those areas, especially in Crystal City. Like, we're here, I don't know if y'all know this, we're broadcasting from Crystal City, which is close to Eagle Pass, if you're familiar with Texas.
The greatest city in the whole world?
Yes, the biggest city in the whole town.
I didn't say big.
I'm saying it's the biggest city in the whole world. It's so big that there's one HEB here.
You don't appreciate the sarcasm.
No, but I think that he puts you there for a reason, you know, because, I mean, some, you know, I'm a pastor's kid, you know, And I come, my biological father is, he's a pastor, but, you know, I don't necessarily think he's in it for the right reasons. And I can't judge anybody yet, and I won't put that judgment on them. But it's just like, you know, God calls you to, like, deal with some people who really got some issues. And I think that's almost like, I don't good. It's like God, like, trusts you to help these people. And I see you interact, because I've done church announcements here, and I've Amen. Given out communion. So I know what type of parishioners we have here, but it's just like, I feel like that's an added blessing, because God trusts you with those type of people, because everybody can't deal with it. Everybody's not in a ministry to actually serve God and to make people, you know, disciples of Christ. They're not always in it for that. And I've seen the ugly side of it. And that's why I have so much respect for you. But I think it's amazing what you're doing here in Crystal City. And I hope and wish that y'all will move to San Antonio so that we can hang out all the time. But I understand what you're doing here. And I thank you so much for being on our podcast today.
Thank you.
You've been amazing. Once again, today it's the Hashtag Goals Podcast. I'm here with Lalu Lallington, the pastor of Crystal City Church.
And Gilgal House of Prayer.
Gilgal House of Prayer. Yeah. Where I do communion sometimes, and yeah. I do announcements sometimes. And Kenyo's here, he just not saying nothing.
Yeah. I said a couple things.
All right, guys. Thank you
for having me as a guest. Lord bless you.
God bless you too. You. Thank you so much for coming on our show, guys. Oh yeah, tell us about your. Oh, guys. So Pastor Lallington has a broadcast. He does. It's Monday through
Friday.
He does on his Facebook. So tell him about your Facebook.
Well, on Facebook, you have to go to laululadito.com, right? Mm-hmm. And every program we've done so far, I think we've been doing it for about a year and a half now. It's on my web Facebook page. We do the broadcast live Monday to Friday at about 6:30 p.m. Texas time.
Yeah.
So if you are in this neck of the woods, you can also listen to us on radio station KJLC 98.3 FM in Crystal City. So it's a simultaneous broadcast. So.
Awesome. Thank you so much. He's
going to have a podcast of his own very soon.
Yes.
Amen.
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 Soon you'll be able to catch him on Twitter. Instagram. I'm going to get all of them.
My nose is going to set up all these things before you
that, go. That brings me to the second point. I'm going to help, but if there's anyone out there who wants to run a bunch of social media for my dad, let me know.
Anyways, right. Guys, thank you so much for listening to us today. Thanks so much, Pastor Lallington, for coming through and doing this, even though I know you're hungry, you're ready to go eat.
I have to leave my rice, and it's getting cold.
All right, guys, this is Hashtag Goals. This is Danielle right. Victoria. You can catch me on Instagram, Danny Vic. Same thing for Facebook Twitter. Is Danielle Victoria. Instagram is Danny Vic. Twitter is Danny Vic as well.
And I'm Kenya HQ on everything. KNYLHQ, and then you can follow the podcast at Hashtag Goals XO. So,
all right, thank you guys.
That's it. See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope that we touched you super well
on some type of goal. Thank you for listening to the Hashtag Goals podcast hosted by me and Kenyo. If you have questions or you want a goal to be like addressed, make sure you hit us on our Instagrams, Facebooks, and Twitters.
See ya.